move on to our final case for this morning, Sosby against Astru.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, Counsel. My name is Marcy Goldblum. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, George Sosby. Mr. Sosby has been trying to get his Social Security disability benefits for the last 17 years. He is still actually trying to get benefits from 1994 through 1998. After the second time his case was in front of the district court, he achieved a remand and subsequently a petition for attorney fees under the Equal Access to Justice Act was filed. In the initial application for disability for each of attorney fees, he did allege that he was a prevailing party. He did not specifically state that his net worth was less than $2 million. That deficiency was pointed out in the defendant's response brief. Defendant did not file a motion to dismiss because of a lack of appropriate pleading, but pointed out in the response brief that the quantification that the less than $2 million was missing. In plaintiff's reply brief, plaintiff specifically cured that defect. Plaintiff stated George Sosby had a net worth at the time that the complaint was filed of less than $2 million and directed the court's attention to parts of the record that supported that. Now, here is what I see as the crux of this case. Neither the statute nor the law clearly sets forth what's required to demonstrate net worth of less than $2 million with regard to a Social Security claimant or anyone actually applying for attorney fees under the Equal Access to Justice Act. And that is where the district court committed error. That's where that's where there was an abuse of discretion.
And the statute puts the burden on the claimant and says the claimant must show that fact, and that's by implication requires some evidence. And this situation could easily have been solved by a simple affidavit of the claimant attaching his tax returns for the year in question.
Well, here's the thing. At the time that defendants stated in the response brief that this information was missing, up until that point, all of the EJA litigation, the plaintiff specifically stating my net worth is less than $2 million with references to things in the record has sufficed. And in fact, there's no case law that anybody can point to that indicates that more is required, whether it be a declaration or anything. And in fact, the case law, which is a bit, which really doesn't give us direct guidance, but for instance, in the Bozzolo case, states that alleging that the individual is a prevailing party at least gets you through the initial threshold. And plaintiff did that in this case. He alleged that he was a prevailing party. The case also indicates that an allegation that the individual has a net worth of less than $2 million may suffice. And indeed, that was done when plaintiff filed his reply brief. Both the district court and defendant seemed to take the position that there was this clear line in terms of what needed to be provided. And that's the problem here. There isn't anything. There really has never been any. The statute says that you must be a prevailing party and defines a prevailing party as an individual whose net worth did not exceed $2 million at the time the civil action was filed. But nowhere in the statute does it set forth what must be shown to fulfill that part of the definition. Nowhere. And in fact, if defendant had filed a motion to dismiss, then obviously plaintiff would have immediately filed an amended application. What defendant did is they filed in their response, brought it to the attention that the usual language was missing. In plaintiff's reply brief, that was corrected. And there's nothing that's been cited to this court that stands for the proposition that plaintiff was required to provide anything additional at that point.
Well, I thought that also your argument was that in the reply brief you pointed to evidence that was already in the record from which one, circumstantial evidence, if you will, that his net worth, in fact, was less than $2 million.
Absolutely.
So, and I thought it was your position that that was his, that was enough to satisfy his burden of going forward.
It is, absolutely. We continue to believe that, and we, in fact, defendant in attached to their brief in front of this court attaches an excerpt from the record, page 666 of the record, and this is testimony at the administrative hearing that's provided by Mr. Sosby's daughter-in-law, and she says, well, like he said, we didn't have insurance, so it was becoming very expensive trying to maintain him and my mother. My mother's on disability, and they were pretty much living off of her check and buying her medication and his medication. Then I lost my job so he could no longer go to the doctor. I started taking him to county, trying to get free help and everything. Then she goes on, when I lost my job, we had no choice because he had no medical and they needed to survive. And he said, okay, then I'll try to do the sit-down job. Now, this isn't, when we look at proof, we're not, this isn't an application for a loan. All that needs to be done here is show that he has a net worth of less than $2 million.
But it has to be done in an evidentiary way so that the court has some basis upon which to adjudicate the application.
That's true, Your
Honor. I suggested that that would ordinarily take the form of an affidavit that would attest to his financial circumstances and perhaps attach some documentary proof, and apparently that affidavit was submitted later on.
There was a declaration that was submitted as part of both the 59E and 60B motions that were submitted to the court.
And what's in that affidavit?
In that affidavit, it states that it says, I, George Sosby, declare that I am the plaintiff in this civil case for disability. I also declare the following information is truth to the best of my knowledge. I have been on SSI disability since December 2003, which was a subsequent.
You don't have to read the whole thing to me,
okay.
But just
he says,
summarize what he's
okay,
got in
he
there.
He basically says, we have no other income and I have not worked since 2002. I never had $2 million in assets and do not expect to inherit any assets in the future. I have no stocks, IRAs, properties, okay. Retirement plan, savings account. I have not received gifts or monies. My assets are furniture, clothes, a 1998 Chevy Malibu, a life insurance policy, $5,000.
And the district court rejected that?
The district court rejected both the 59E and the 60B. The court rejected the 59E on the basis that there had been no, quote, new material that had been submitted. We contend that it was new because since there was no court, there was no statute nor court law on point directing what needed to be submitted, counsel had every right to believe that what had been submitted in the reply brief was adequate. What was submitted then in terms of the declaration was certainly new evidence and should have been considered by the court, whether under the 59E or the 60B, but the court refused to consider those motions substantively, and we believe it was an abuse of discretion for the court to refuse to consider the merits of either the 59E or the 60B, and that the court found that the 60B motion couldn't be considered because he considered it technically a second 59E motion because it was filed within 10 days, which is set forth in our materials, I think, is clearly rebutted. What I'd like to refer to save the rest of my time for rebuttal, if that's all right.
Certainly. Yes, and we'll hear from Ms. Ahmed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. May it please the Court, Mona Ahmed, representing Commissioner Astru. I think the important point here is that the plain language of the EJA distinguishes between what an applicant can merely allege and what an applicant has to show.
But where in EJA does it say that circumstantial evidence of net worth is incompetent? Evidence that's already in the record.
The EJA doesn't say that, and I don't think that's what the district court found, that circumstantial evidence could never show net worth. I think the problem...
Why was this circumstantial evidence so lacking that it wasn't enough against this backdrop of this never actually having happened before the way it unfolded in this case? Why isn't it enough to allow him to go forward and to shift the burden of production, although I assume the burden of persuasion always stays on the applicant, but to shift the burden of production to the commissioner to show that, in fact, you know, they've got a 1099 showing that he got a large payment or an estate tax return showing that he got an inheritance or something?
Well, I think the point for the district court was that the references to the evidentiary record were not probative of what Mr. Sosabee had to prove. He had to because they referred to him living in an apartment, which the district court found not sufficiently probative of net worth. A person could live in an apartment by choice.
He says he's unable to work, he can't afford the best care, he needs money for medical care. His work in some years before, I know that the judge makes a point about, you know, how timely the information is, but it seems to me that this is, in fact, evidence from which a rational person could infer less than $2 million, really.
Well, I think the district court was within reason to look for more. I think the district court expects to see affidavits with EJA petitions.
And why does the district court think this affidavit at the 59E isn't new then? Isn't that sort of turning around and saying saying something contradictory?
Well, at the 59E level, Mr. Sosabee never explained why the affidavit could not have been submitted earlier.
He didn't know he needed to. You spent about a page in your brief. Your main brief was about the amount of the fees. It wasn't really about this. This was something that the commissioner glommed onto as soon as the district judge thought it was of interest. So you didn't really make out much of a point on this either.
Well, the commissioner pointed out that
In about a page of about an 18-page brief that's mostly about amount of fees. So arguably that could even be considered waiver on your point of view as an undeveloped point.
Well, I don't think there was much more to say other than at the point that Mr. Sosabee filed his application, he did not make any reference whatsoever to his net worth, and that omission precluded any award of fees because the statute requires a showing of net worth. That's all there was for the commissioner to say. And the commissioner made no argument with respect to the sufficiency of proof. That was a decision that was made by the district court. And the issue before this court was that an abuse of discretion?
But he said, I mean, there's a sort of a statutory round robin here because Section 2412 D2 capital B defines the term party as an individual whose net worth did not exceed $2 million at the time the civil action was filed. And so by the time he said, I'm a prevailing party, if you really want to get as picky as the commissioner's getting, you could also say he has in fact implicitly alleged by using the word party that he is an individual whose net worth did not exceed $2 million. That's the statute. That's not anything else.
But the statute indicates that a party has to show eligibility, and the Supreme Court in Scarborough, in discussing that requirement, indicates that the showings required, where the statute refers to showing, and net worth is one of the showings that is mandatory.
Scarborough doesn't discuss that particular one, but yes, Scarborough discusses other things.
Well, it doesn't discuss what would suffice as a showing, but it does indicate that where the statute refers to showing, that does impose a proof burden on the applicant. Scarborough distinguishes between the allegation of not substantially justified, which was what was particularly at issue in Scarborough, and contrasts that allegation with the showings that it did not discuss. But it did indicate that those showings imposed a proof burden on the applicant.
How many times have you seen an equal justice, an EJA petition in a Social Security disability? Are people with net worth more than $2 million your usual customers?
I mean, I don't know if they're usual customers or not. An applicant for disability benefits as opposed to supplemental security income benefits, which is a need-based program.
I understand Mr. it's not Sosabee, need-based. I'm not making that point. I'm just wondering.
I mean, I think it's not the commissioner's obligation to show that he's not eligible. It was Mr. Sosabe's obligation to prove that he was eligible.
Then he said, I am eligible, and he pointed to this indirect evidence in the record, and he files the affidavit at the 59E, and there can't really be any doubt on this record at this point that he really is eligible. The commissioner will get a windfall if you don't have to pay these fees.
Well, I mean, the question is not, I think, not whether the commissioner gets a windfall, but did Mr. Sosabe establish his entitlement to fees before the district court, before the time was up, before judgment was entered? And the district court found that he didn't. And the question is, was that an abuse of discretion? And I submit that on this record, it's not an abuse of discretion, because the district court has no idea what Mr.
Well, now it does. As soon as the 59E motion was filed, it knew everything it needed to know.
But that was too late. And was that an abuse of
discretion? So why bother to have a 59E motion at all?
Well, the case law is clear that the purpose
when
of 59E...
When the law isn't clear, sometimes that might be a reason to file a 59E motion. If this had been litigated as many times as the cocaine base versus crack issue had been in this court, I would be 100% with you. You know, don't waste my time in a 59E motion. You know exactly what you need to say. This is not that kind of issue.
Well, I think for the district court it was that kind of issue, and I think what can be gleaned
from
the case...
He's never seen it before, because it's not there. I mean, perhaps Judge Dragigian has seen things that the rest of us haven't, but I don't think it's not been a litigated issue, as you know, writing your brief.
But, I mean, it has been a litigated issue, and when in some cases, and when it has been litigated, courts require something. You know, courts have... I think consistently asked for more than a mere allegation,
But courts have accepted a simple affidavit that says I'm not worth $2 million. They have.
They have, but that was
even
not presented in this case.
Even less than this affidavit showed.
That was not presented in this case, and there was no explanation for why it wasn't presented, and I think that troubled the district court. The district court indicated, in fact, in its order that there was no explanation given, and I think that had there been some reason why an affidavit could not have been obtained, the district court might have come out differently on those fairly vague and non-probative circumstantial evidence. District court might have come out differently, but you know, providing an affidavit is not something that's burdensome for the applicant, and it's the applicant's burden of proof.
Would the commissioner have opposed leave to file an amended application in this situation where there was clearly a misunderstanding about what the claimant needed to show?
The commissioner would have opposed leave to file an amended application. The commissioner wouldn't have opposed, had the affidavit been filed with the response. I don't understand the appellant's argument about the commissioner should have moved for dismissal, because this is not a jurisdictional question that would have precluded the court from considering the application on its merits.
But
it was simply a defective application.
If the commissioner would not have opposed leave to file an amended application, then why are we all here? It seems to me that we're elevating form over substance.
Well, we're here because the district court made a decision that was purely within the district court's discretion to look at the evidentiary support and find it not sufficient. And again, I think the lack of any explanation for why Mr. Sosabe did not provide an affidavit, which I think the district courts are used to seeing, which are, in my experience, routine, with respect to a Social Security claimant. And I think what Mr. Sosabe is asking for is a judicially created rule that Social Security claimants ought not have to show net worth. And that would certainly be improper, because the statute requires an evidentiary showing. There's nothing that indicates that Social Security claimants, as a rule, are disadvantaged and don't have substantial assets.
Actually, he's saying that it's an abuse of discretion not to have considered the proof of net worth offered at the 59E level. That's quite a different thing to ask for than what you just stated. It's, I complied, here's the proof. There was a misunderstanding beforehand as to the level of proof. I'm really sorry. You know, there were some hoops that you would have thought were okay to jump through, other hoops that you didn't think were okay, but now I've fixed it, and the judge wasn't willing to listen anymore. That's not the same thing as saying there's no rule.
But My time is up. May I respond? I mean, again, that was a matter of was it within the district court's discretion to make that ruling? And where, again, even with the 59E, no explanation was given for why it wasn't done earlier.
Okay. We certainly have your position, so we will. How much time does you have 2 minutes, Ms. Goldblum, if you have anything else.
A few things, Your Honor. To begin with, the Scarborough case, in that case, it's very interesting. Justice Ginsburg cites to the Bozzolo case without rejection. The Bozzolo case is the one that says that by alleging prevailing party, that was sufficient to get over the initial hurdle of showing the implication of net worth. And also, Bozzolo indicates that the mere statement of that net worth didn't exceed $2 million at the time suit was filed was sufficient. But to address a couple of other things, the district court was absolutely abusing its discretion by finding that the 59E was essentially too late and refusing to recognize that the declaration that was attached showed without question that this gentleman met the net worth requirement. Both the case law and the statute, I think, make abundantly clear that this is an area that has not been litigated. There are no if you look through the statement of authorities, both from plaintiff's brief and defendants, you'll see no cases particularly that are against the Social Security Administration, but even so, nothing that specifically addresses what do you have to show that you got less than $2 million. I would also state that this is the absolute height of form being elevated over substance. And finally, just anecdotally, I would say that, you know, my firm, we have been representing disability claimants for more than 15 years. I think I could count a handful of them that maybe got to half of the net worth of $2 million. And I think the record here on the reply brief, both when we provided the statement and citation to the record that pointed to this gentleman's circumstance, I don't think anybody could have had a legitimate doubt that Mr. Sosby's net worth at any time was less than $2 million. I would ask that you reverse the finding of the district court and send this case back so that we can litigate the merits of this EJA application. And I thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.